Hi, this is Ken Tangen, and this is episode one of What's It Like? My guest is Phil Enloe. Phil, most people know you as the gospel singer and songwriter, but you must have started out as a child. So tell me from your experience, what's it like being a child?
Well, I came from a loving couple. A mom was a farm girl, and dad was a entrepreneur, wanted to be anyway. He had his own barber shop.
Oh.
And so he raised six kids and worked hard, stood up, you know, often 10 to 12 hours a day like this, cutting hair, you know, and entertaining people in his barber shop. And he hit a niche. And I'll mention about niches a little bit later, but he hit a niche. And I believe there's a niche for everybody out there who seeks a niche of service, that if you'll put others ahead of yourself and want to serve, money follows a service. And if you put other people ahead of yourself, you'll find it pays every time.
Just have to find your spot.
Yeah, that's it, the niche. And a timely niche. And for instance, is that my father developed the skill to cut flat tops. Do you remember the flat top?
Absolutely.
Well, he could do that better than anybody else. And in our area, St. Louis, Missouri area, he was the best. He could make it look like a board would stand on it. And the jocks from all the schools came and would wait in line. It was jammed. But that was a niche that helped him feed his family.
Yeah.
And he went for that. And that was, but now flat tops are out, right? So the niche is gone. So
it was a specialized skill.
Yeah, that's right. And you find a niche for now. What meets people's needs now? And you'll always have happy work.
So what did he go, from flat tops to some other kind of hairdo?
Yeah, as time went on, yes, he did. But then, you know, the industry of the hair grooming has totally changed. Now it's stylist and all that. He was a barber, you know, a guy's barber, and shaved people and, you know, cut hair and told stories and that kind of thing. So it changed at his on his watch. You know the old story about the buggy whip, of course. You know, you can make the best buggy whip in town, but they don't need buggy whips, the niche is gone. Follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Anyway, well, you're asking questions, so I'll let you
ask. Oh, no, you're doing great. I was asking in this, speaking of niches, in this group of six kids, where did you fall?
Oh, I was next to the baby.
Ah.
And I worked it, you know. And I love my brothers. I have one sister. I love her. We're a loving family. And our parents didn't leave us economics. No, they did. They teach us about economics. Because that wasn't as important to them.
Mm-hmm.
So all of us on our own had to discover some things. But they were fabulous, wonderful people. They left us more principles than dollars, if you understand what I'm saying. And that's very important. My older brother gave me a book, an old book called, what was the name of that? It was called The Richest Man in Babylon.
Ah, yes.
And I read that book about finances and economics. That helped me. It really did. Because dad, money didn't matter to dad as long as he could pay the bills.
Mm-hmm.
And what? But that book changed me, and everybody wants to be a success now.
How did your parents impact your beliefs?
How did they impact my beliefs?
Yeah, did you grow up with a basic philosophy or religion?
Yeah. I watched them. First of all, they were in love and faithful to one another. This is rare in this day and age when a couple's been married 50, 60 years. That's a love story. Not when they've just been married or living together for a little while. That's not a love story. Love is not just a feeling. Love cooks meals for people that you don't eat. And love does laundry of someone else's clothes. But I saw my parents in love, and that they loved us, and that their priorities, of course, they included God in their life. You know,
mm-hmm.
Not everybody does.
So they were Christian?
Yeah, Christian. Some mm-hmm. people believe. Some people believe in the cosmic collision. You know, I have chosen and found out that it takes less faith to believe the Bible than it does, you know, Darwin's theory. I have a nice little poem for you on that.
Okay.
Those Once I was a tadpole with my tail so long and thin. Then it was a bullfrog with my tail tucked in. Then it was a baboon in a tropical tree. And now I am a professor with a PhD. Anyway, I happen to believe that things are too well organized for them not to have an organizer, okay?
Mm-hmm. So you grew up in this belief system, and it still guides you today? You're still in the same, you haven't changed your belief system?
Even if you never follow God in your life, if you read his book, he'll give you some awesome success principles that are amazing, that you'd be better off to follow those if rather than anyone else. And so, mm-hmm. yeah. And the Bible, by the way, is the only book you have to really know the author. Yeah. Anyway, I'm not trying to preach to you. I'm just telling you what it's done in my life. It keeps me on track, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Simple principles like do to others as you have them do unto you.
Right. And, so then for you, it's a consistency from your childhood to now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people change. They go on different paths, but yours has been, in many ways, raise up a child as they will grow, and you have grown in that same path.
Yeah.
How did you get started in singing?
Well, I was singing tenor in the choir at high school, okay? And I got an offer from this weekend quartet that sang gospel songs. And I thought, well, okay, I'll give it a try, you know? And I enjoyed it. I went to every kind of church you can think of, every kind of state fair and secular setting and retirement homes, you can name it. I went to on the weekends, on Saturday and Sundays, and then I could go to school on Monday, you know? And men taught me principles of finance as well. They treated me equal. They were older guys, okay? They were like real old guys, like late 20s and early 30s, you know? But they, you know, I'd make $35 on the weekend. I thought that was great, you know, and better than a part-time job. And what happened because of that, me singing, I got a scholarship to Southern Illinois University for music. And so that's got started me in kind of I was going to be a music educator, I thought. I never thought I'd ever be a singer mm-hmm. myself. And then I went to Akron University and worked with art there. So that's where my education is, basically. But ended up, I was so many doors open for me. Here's the niche, you know, of that I could come and sing gospel songs, that it took over.
Now, gospel songs, this is in particular Southern Gospel Quartet music, right?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Which I think of as kind of Dixieland with words. It has that same kind of beat and up-tempo and style.
Well, the slaves brought to America a lot of their rhythms, a lot of their reaching out to God songs, you know, amen, amen, that kind mm-hmm. of stuff, you know. And so it's a big part of our American heritage.
Yes.
Sacred music, gospel hymns, right. You know, it is.
So how many years have you been singing?
Well, I started in high school in 19, none of your business. No, I'm just kidding. Started in 1963. And then in 1964, I got a job offer to sing for money, okay, in Memphis, Tennessee with a called the Blackwood Brothers, the Sons of the Blackwood Brothers. And so I went from there, and then I went to the Couriers. And
the Blackwood Brothers were a famous group. One of the premier groups, and so this would be their children that you were singing with?
Yes, the sons of, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we got to open the big concerts with the big boys, and so I knew them all and got acquainted with all of them, and doors kept opening. And then one time, I ended up being a soloist, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, man, I don't know if I can handle it or not. But as I stepped out, and things began to get better and better. You know, I was scared to death at first.
Was stage fright common for you?
Oh, my word. Embarrassment was part of my life, yeah. And I never saw myself as an orator. I never saw myself as a communicator. I never saw myself really as a singer. But the doors open. I mean, I had this guy this evangelist that contacted me and wanted me somebody to sing a couple songs before he preached. I said, nah, I don't want to do that. But he pestered me enough where I joined him. 6 months later, I mean, just doing this on the weekend, because now at this point, while I was going to college, I was also working at a newspaper as an artist and ad designer. And then on the weekends, I'd sing with him. And then after 6 months, the doctor said he couldn't travel anymore. He handed me 6 months of dates, said, you're going to have to do these by yourself. I thought, you're kidding me. You are kidding me.
So you show up and do the first few songs?
Well, I said, I'll tell you what, I'll call every one of these guys that have booked you and tell them I'm willing to come, but if you're not going to be there, but you can cancel it or have me. Everyone for 6 months said, no, come on. So it was an open door, and it just didn't stop after that. That was amazing to me. I mean, I never saw myself as a desirable performer or communicator. But.
So what was the best part of traveling so much?
I've been in 48 nations around the world. I have been in every kind of culture you can think of. I've seen the sights of the world and enjoy. I love people. I love being around people. I like communicating with people and encouraging them. And so the best part's not driving and flying in the airplanes. The best part is being with people. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're a people person.
Yeah, I am. Not everybody is, but I am. I love. As a matter of fact, I treat an audience like one person, like I'm talking to one person, not a crowd.
You know? With traveling all the time, I mean, how many weeks a year were you working?
I was probably at the height of it all. I was probably doing 250
wow.
dates a year, something
That's
like that.
That's a lot of singing.
I went through a time when I had. You know, your vocal cords have no nerve endings. You know that, so you can strain it and hurt it and not know that you are. And so I thought, hey, you know, I sing better at night than I do in the morning. So maybe you ought to every morning sing and then to you know and vocalize and then sing that night. Well, overdid it. I got calluses on my vocal cords and they called nodules and well, that was a pain. And so I had to have those taken off. And it was just a lesson I learned. You know, and as time goes, and I would tell any young singer today. Make sure that you rest your voice, you know. Pavarotti would not talk for 3 days before he sang. It wouldn't say a thing.
I had a vocal teacher who used to say that the primary qualification of being a singer is to have iron vocal cords.
Everybody's got a little perspective. I don't even know what I did. I pushed too far. And then when you have concerts, you got to do, you need to keep pushing. And then it's like your hand. You can get calluses on your hand. And vocal cords vibrate, you know, you get a callus, they don't vibrate as much. So,
did you have tricks that you used to soothe your voice or to keep going? Or
yeah, rest. When you feel fatigue coming on, just shut up and let it rest and it'll come back, you know. That's the only thing I learned, because otherwise, I love coffee, you know, like salt water, you know.
So you can add a lot of things to it, but they're probably not really...
Well, I'll tell you, Dr. Ken, you can be anything you really want to be if you set your mind to it and devote yourself to it. You can change, and you can overcome things in your life. You can be more than you ever thought you could be if you'll be devoted to it. But some people just go with the flow. And I think, first of all, you got to find yourself and look in the mirror. I know a lot of young people, they're changing every day, but look in the mirror and accept yourself and say, I like you. And don't compare yourself with anybody else and be happy every day and find that every day is a gift that you've been given to be happy. And if you're not happy, you've been robbed. And so find yourself and set some goals for yourself, reachable goals. You know, you really do have to have reachable goals, I think.
You've had a number of albums recorded. Do you remember the first time you entered a recording studio?
Yeah, of course I do. I was scared to death, you know. You know, most of the time we don't like our voice. You ever notice that? The first time you hear your voice, you say, that's not me. Well, it is. That's just you hear yourself different than someone else does.
Because you all hear yourself in your head.
That's right. You hear yourself in your head, but other people hear it outside. So you finally there again have to come to the point of, I like my voice. It's okay. I'm not being braggadocio. I like my voice. So And that's a real balance in your life, don't you think? And that is to, if a person is contented with himself and likes himself and has crossed that bridge, then they can look for others to encourage them to do the same thing.
Are you still recording?
A year and a half ago, I started a church. There again, because I saw some osmosis in the church, some changes, major things take place, that my niche was, the door of my niche was closing. And that is what the church wants now. See, the church realized one day that they're losing the young people, and they're going to have to stop singing all these hymns. So, but the pendulum swung so far that they threw out the older people and said, if you don't like it, there's a door. So I saw all these older people that wanted to have the type of music that touched their heart and moved them, their spirit and what have you, and they were told to leave the church. So I thought, I've been to every kind of denomination you can think of, and I find that there's people that are wonderful in every one of them. And so I decided that the niche now for me was to start a church and gather these people in. So that's what I did. I'm still doing some songwriting.
Now you're Pastor Phil.
Yeah. Sounds funny, doesn't it? Well, anyway, I still write some songs. I just wrote a song lately, just a couple of weeks ago. I got an email from a person people text a lot now, don't they? There's all this new jargon that they're using, FYI, and all these. And someone wrote and said, hey, it's great to hear from you. OMG. I sold my MG some while back, and I realized that people are saying this all the time. Oh my God! When they get hit by a car, or there's a problem that they get, or publisher's clearinghouse comes to the door, they all say, "Oh my God!" So I thought, yeah, I'll write a song to it. So I did. I wrote a song to that.
Is that the world's shortest prayer?
You were cutting out on me there. I'm sorry.
I was just asking if the world's shortest prayer is OMG.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Well, I took it to the point of Mary when she held her baby in her arms. All she could say was, oh, my God, And then Jesus on the cross, when the father turned his back on him, he said, why have you forsaken me? Oh, my God, So anyway, that's what I did. So I wrote a song not long ago because we had a guy die in one of our concerts. He was 83 years old. And he had been only had started going to church for 2 weeks. And second song just died in the service, and no one knew until it was over. I thought, wrote a song, what a way to go. I wrote a song too not long ago, knowing the fact that America has been throwing God out for quite a while. It's against the law to have 10 commandments anywhere, it's against the law to pray in schools, da 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 da. I said, I wrote a song, God Don't Leave America Today, So I just, I like to write songs that are meaningful to what I'm experiencing,